The final case today is Augustine v. the Department of Veterans Administration. This case will be feature an argument by telephone. Can you let me know when you have them on the phone?
Mr. Chang?
Yes.
Good morning. This is the Federal Circuit. We are online with the court, so you're free to go.
Mr. Chang, this is Judge Rader. Can you hear me?
Yes.
With me on the bench are Judge Dyke and Judge Clevenger, and Mr. Todar is here representing the Department of Veterans Administration. In just a moment, I will acknowledge you to begin your argument. I'd like to first ask you, however, to proceed somewhat more slowly than you might otherwise. If you would be so kind as to pause after each sentence so that the court, if necessary, can interrupt and ask you questions. This kind of proceeding is going to require us to move a little more slowly than we might otherwise. The court will take that into consideration with respect to timing. Are you ready to proceed, Mr. Chang?
Yes.
We can hear you fine, Mr. Todar. Can you hear Mr. Chang?
Yes, Your Honor.
Then if you would like to proceed, you may, Mr. Chang. Again, I ask you to pause and allow the court to ask questions.
Yes.
Please proceed.
Thank you. Good morning. First, I'd like to express my hearty thanks to the court and the opposing counsel for accommodating my situation, and my special thanks to the clerk for making this telephonic arrangement possible. The central issue here today is a legal issue, not a factual issue, that deserves to be viewed de novo by this court. The AJA confused the entitlement eligibility issue because under Section 3330 CD, once a party didn't prevail, that very party tied to reasonable attorney's fees, expense, and cost for that. Unlike most other federal fees statutes that only make veteran party else subject to further discretion in the system. But that's not the case. That's why the AJA in for proceeding, firm proceeding, confused the entitled with the legitimate.
Yeah.
Furthermore, the AJ and the AD already admitted that Fishnell Augustine is a trust eligible and is the prevailing party under section 3330DB. Neither the AJ nor agency has cited any cases or that support the position that since Fishner failed to prove that her counsel efforts have contributed to the withdrawal by agency of its petition by the, for review by the board, not only the entire bill, but also the entire cost
incurred, Mr. Chang?
Yes.
This is Judge Clevenger. If I may interrupt you, I want to ask a couple of questions to see if I can focus the argument.
Okay.
As I read the decision of the board here, the decision of the administrative judge that became the final decision of the board, they have two grounds, two reasons why they say that you failed to show a reasonable fee under their interpretation of the statute. The first was that you did not enter your notice of appearance until somewhat late in the game. And secondly, they say that you failed to show that the attorney's efforts contributed to her success on appeal. So the board seems to think that there are, in order for a fee to be reasonable, it has to be a fee, large piece of which was earned earlier than it was in terms of an appearance notice, and secondly, that it was obtained, that the services contributed success. And I understand you to be saying both of those standards are wrong as a matter of law, that it shouldn't make a difference when you enter your appearance if you actually gave legal advice, and secondly, the statute should not be interpreted to require the requester of the fees to prove that their efforts produced the victory. Instead, I understand you to say the correct interpretation of whether a fee is reasonable is whether or not the fee, the efforts of the attorney were undertaken in pursuit of defense of the client's case, and that the amount of time spent in so doing was not itself unreasonable. Does that, if you follow me, do I understand your argument?
Yes. If I may, I just want to add a few words. The notice of appearance was really technical in the sense that I began at the time when Fishnell Augustine felt that was unable to handle the case herself. That was after the petition was filed by the agency.
Yeah, we have the timeline from the date of March 14, 2000, when your client got her victory at the AJ, and then a month later the agency appealed. That's in 2000. You appear to show up in March of 01. And then the proceedings go with the agency filing a motion to their appeal and the board granting the motion.
No, actually, I was retained in June 2000.
You were retained in June of 2000?
Yes.
Is that shown in the record anywhere?
It's in my state.
Excuse me?
Yes.
Is there a record cite to that? I show your first.
Also, retainer agreement there. Let me double check here.
Okay.
Yeah, actually, March 1701.
March 1701. Yes.
Yes, I was retained at that time. After the initial decision was issued by the AJ.
Yeah.
And at that time, the petition for review was already filed.
Yes.
And my client so filed a cross petition, And then in response to the court's petition, agency and OPM also applied to the court's petition.
You didn't.
She felt that she was unable to handle given the further reply by the agency. And in the meantime, the agency also provided some kind of settlement.
Now, Mr. Chang, you did not, this is Judge Rader, you did not file your notice of appearance, however, until August. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Right, the day before the mediation, as I recall.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm unaware of, I researched, and I'm unaware of any regulation at the MSPB that says when it is you're required to file a notice of appearance or whether your entitlement to attorney's fees under any standard depends on when you filed your notice of appearance. I don't know what my colleagues will say, but from my perspective, it's just a canard to notice the idea that you wouldn't be entitled to fees because of filing a notice of appearance. I don't know that you ever need to file a notice of appearance, but we don't have that issue in front of us.
That's not my understanding.
Now, can I ask a question, sir, about the agency makes its motion to dismiss. It withdraws its petition for review in September of 01, September 7, that's at A209. Then the agency moves to dismiss in November 11, 01, but it's unwilling to have the original decision of the AJ reinstated. Is that correct?
Correct.
And so it wants to dismiss its appeal, but it does not want to reinstate the victory for your client, which has been vacated by the board.
Yes.
And so then we go a nice period of 2 years. We go to September of 03 when the board finally grants the government's motion to dismiss and makes clear that the full board is reinstating your client's victory.
In response to our petition.
In response to a piece of paper that you filed complaining that it was no good to simply dismiss the appeal without reinstating your client's victory.
Correct.
And so I just want a confirmation from you that until September 2203, your client was still in jeopardy of not being able to reclaim her victory in front of the AJ because the agency was refusing to allow that to happen.
Not only that, my client was forced to resign. When?
We'll learn about that later.
When the initial decision was vacated and negotiations settled failed, and then they set up the pressure, okay. And then she was forced to resign.
Hey, do you know there's any explanation why it took from November of 01 to September of 03 for the board to finally clean this case up?
I do not know because I submitted request for a decision.
Okay.
I think twice, according to the record. We submitted a request for a decision. We thought it might be a political issue, but it's just my personal speculation, because in order to invalidate the one of the outstanding scholar program, I think it would create a huge problem among the federal agencies. And that's back created through the consent decree.
Mr. Chang, you have 4 minutes left on the clock here. Do you want to save some time for rebuttal?
Okay. That's why I want to reiterate, at the time, the entire work was performed in my professional good faith judgment as so-called necessary and appropriate in response to the case as needed under the then circumstances. Particularly in light of the fact you just covered that the initial decision was vacated and the board characterized arguments by agency and OPM as strong and even indicated that this decision may not even survive. And therefore, it will reopen for supplemental argument and briefing, which is there, and that in jeopardy. And I was forced to do additional work to make sure my client's interests were reinstated and protected. And another thing I want to point out is the AJ somehow tried to liken our efforts as a capitalist, which is really not appropriate, because our complaint has never been mooted as a result of any legislative efforts by us or through us. And here there's a quasi-judicially sanctioned order that changed the relationship ultimately, unlike the capitalist spirit. So I don't think that likening is appropriate here.
Well, the Judge Reed is the judge that presided on the merits of your client's case in the beginning. Isn't that correct? Is Judge Reed the administrative judge that ruled in your client's favor way back in the 14th of March 2000?
Correct.
Right. But even so, you still are asking us to, if you prevail here on a remand, you're asking us to remove Judge Reed from the case?
Correct. May come back on ad hoc basis, because for in all the cases I've read, it has been determined then that the finder of the fact is the best person to evaluate the limit of the fee.
Well, I don't follow. It seems to me that your argument with Judge Reed is that Judge Reed applied an incorrect legal standard in deciding entitlement to fees. If we were to disagree and to agree with you that the wrong legal standard was applied, I don't see that there's any evidence that Judge Reed would be biased or otherwise not competent to decide quantum.
Well, if I may, if we review the history of the case, there were two initial decisions, there were two OSCs. In each case, Judge Reed tried to use a different statute, like the Uniform Service Employment and Reemployment Rights Act, has nothing to do with this case, in order to exercise a discretionary power to deny he is entitled. And then at one point, he even tried to characterize me as a non-lawyer Californian. The history is enough that he has created enough transactional cost and social weight since 2003. If we allow him to come back in another 3 years, it's really unfortunate and unfair to my client. I'm sure any competent person, because the statement is well documented to the minute, any person who look at the statement can come up with a reasonable calculation based on the established case law. I don't think we need Judge Reed to come back to evaluate the case.
Mr. Chang, your time has expired. Let's hear from Mr. Todar for the Department of Veterans Affairs, and we'll give you a few minutes of rebuttal when he finishes.
Thank you.
Mr. Todar?
Hey, please, the court. We disagree with the premise that this case is being reviewed pursuant to whether the proper legal standards was applied.
Can I just interrupt you for a second? Mr. Chang, can you hear Mr. Todar?
Not a bit. It's a little bit too low for me.
I will attempt to speak up.
Thank you.
The question in the appeal is not whether the MSPB applied the prevailing party standard. The administrative judge found that Ms. Augustine was the prevailing party. The only question is whether the finding that in this case the reasonable amount of attorney's fees which are required under VEOA in this case is none at all. That decision was within the administrative judge's discretion as committed both by this court's precedent.
What legal standard did the AJ use to decide reasonableness?
Found that the fees that were incurred were connected to the relief obtained in the case. and found that they were not.
Well, let me give you a hypothetical, okay? Let's suppose that you're a lawyer, you represent somebody, you're successful at the district court level, and the other party appeals. And in anticipation of having to brief the appeal, you spend time writing an opposition brief. And then the party decides to dismiss the appeal and to leave the original judgment in place. And this is a situation in which the statute provides for attorney's fees to the prevailing party. Is your contention that the work that was done on the appeal is not compensable?
No, we don't think that that would be a good rule of law, and we also don't think that that's what happened here.
Okay, so you agree that under my hypothetical that attorney's fees would be recoverable?
I can't speak to every fact pattern that may arise, but for the purposes of this procedure, yes.
Even though there was no showing that the brief that was prepared by the appellant had any effect on the decision of the appellee to quit?
We're not saying that the work performed in the appeal, which should be reviewed following a Buchanan catalyst theory analysis. That's not what we're saying. We're saying that given the opportunity after the show cause order to demonstrate, to meet his burden, for Ms. Augustine to meet her burden.
Now, I want to stick with Judge Dyke's hypothetical. And the attorney's efforts in Judge Dyke's hypothetical, okay, there's no showing that that contributed to the success of the appeal. In Judge Dyke's hypothetical, a brief was written.
I'll accept that.
A brief was written. Okay. And after the brief was filed, the appellee withdrew, said, "We give up."
In this case, the brief, only brief that was filed was an opposition.
I don't want to talk about this case. I want to talk about a situation in which legal efforts were undertaken in defense of a client.
Yes.
And it turned out that that effort was unnecessary because the other party quit.
In a case where the statute provides that attorney's fees shall be
required, yeah.
Then if the fees were reasonable, as found by the judge in that situation, the client is the prevailing party, and therefore
they win. Even though the attorney's efforts did not, was no showing that the attorney's efforts contributed to the success on appeal.
If the party was prevailing at the district court level is in the hypothetical,
no.
Yes.
Okay. Now, in our case, the party prevailed at the district court level, if you will.
By analogy, yes.
By analogy. And legal, and there was an appeal taken by the loser, the agency.
Yes.
And legal efforts were undertaken, briefing, consulting, talking, right?
That is actually an issue of some dispute.
Well, that might be whether or not some of those conferences dealt with the appeal as opposed to dealt with something else can be dealt with later on a quantum hearing. But the point is that the AJ here said there is absolutely no entitlement to any fee at all because there was no showing that the attorney's efforts contributed to the success.
That was part of what the administrative judge said.
Okay. And what the other part was, they said you didn't file your notice of appearance until late.
Well, that is part of the analysis.
Is there anything else?
Yes, Your Honor.
What?
The finding that most of the services performed actually relate to separate claims, equal
okay,
opportunity
fine. That's,
claims.
That's that quantum. He threw them all out.
Yes, he did.
He may have, the AJ may have correct. Let's assume that Mr. Wild Chang was giving her some advice about how to get a driver's license. Of course, he can't collect for that, and he knows he can't collect for that. But what was the rationale for throwing out the work that was related to the appeal?
With respect to the work that was performed on the
yeah.
appeal, and we agree that if the court finds that
we there went was to mediation, the agency said we'd like to mediate. He prepared for mediation. He went to mediation. He sat in a room and billed hours.
Yes.
That time was denied.
The court also, the administrative judge also
said that time was denied.
Yes, it was.
Because?
The administrative judge found that in reviewing even that time, that the finding in the decision was even that time related to claims outside of the appeal
No. The mediation wasn't about something not having to do with the case.
It was within the case, yes.
Sure. So the AJ threw out the hours that Mr. Wild Chang spent in the mediation room. Why?
In this case, there were two reasons. One was that there was the reasoning that it wasn't connected to the relief ultimately attained. We're not defending that as a rationale. There's also a finding that even those hours, even though they were spent in the MSPB...
Wait. So you're not defending the rationale. You're conceding error.
We are not conceding error in that the theory that if it's a catalyst, you wouldn't win if it was only on the appeal. We don't think that that's a correct...
The contributing to success on appeal, proving that you contributed to success, you're going to give up that, right?
That is not our position. Our position is that they have to show that the hours that were expended were in pursuit of the appeal, and that they were reasonably tied to the success obtained.
That's not what the AJ said. If that's your true and honest feeling, sir, why didn't you come in here and confess error on the legal standard and ask voluntarily for a remand for a hearing on quantum so that somebody could go through Mr. Chang's legal hours and say, okay, were you talking to her about her driver's license today, or were you talking to her about her appeal?
The administrative judge gave him that opportunity. He filed a show cause order.
But then the administrative judge threw out the time that you've now conceded he's entitled to be paid for. You have conceded that the hours in mediation, at least, are compensable under the statute.
We feel that
will you concede that right now?
There are two reasons why we're not conceding.
Will you concede that right now?
No, there are two reasons why we're not conceding.
Assuming the mediation was about the appeal on the merits.
That is the assumption.
Okay,
that
I'm assuming that some of the time in the mediation hearing was dedicated to the question of the merits of her removal, which she won. Okay, mm-hmm. Would you concede he's entitled to be paid for that?
We can't make that assumption. Therefore, I'm not in position.
I'm
to
asking
make that
you
assumption.
On a hypothetical.
As a hypothetical matter, if in Judge Dyke's hypothetical, if an attorney were representing
someone, I'm hypothetical
in this,
assuming that that there was some time spent that Mr. Chang can establish that some of his hours were actually spent researching or talking, advising her about the merits of the appeal that had been taken against her. Mm-hmm. He's entitled to be compensated for that, correct?
As a hypothetical matter, an attorney would be entitled to that. There are specific reasons in this case why he's not entitled
to
that.
Your position at oral argument today, sir, is about 180 degrees away from your red brief. In your red brief, you embrace this, nutty standard that you sort of have to prove that your legal effort is what caused the government to cave in. There's not a hint in your brief. Not a hint in your brief anywhere of what you're telling us at oral argument today. You show it to me and I'll apologize.
We found that Ms. Augustine failed to demonstrate that Mr. Chang's fees were reasonable. And when we say that they're not reasonable, we found that they were tied to claims not before the board. Now, with respect to the claims in the mediation, he was given an opportunity to present sufficient evidence to demonstrate that, and he didn't.
Right, but I mean, if you read the rationale, if you say, well, the AJ said, well, to the extent that his fees were not even related to the case, he can't get them. And I don't believe Mr. Chang's going to argue that he's entitled to fees having to do with her driver's license, her employment contract, or someplace else. But the AJ wrote an opinion in which he said, as a matter of law, you can't get the fee unless you can prove that your efforts caused the government to cave in. And you've given that up. Thank you.
All right. And insofar as that may be applicable as a general principle, there's also the evidentiary problem we have in this case, which is Mr. Chang, after the show cause order, was given the opportunity to show what hours were connected to the success of the
appeal.
But
he did show, did he not, that he spent hours, for example, on the objection to the agency's motion to withdraw, and he was denied those fees. Why isn't that like writing the appellate brief?
Those hours, actually, there's a specific problem with that, which is he actually opposed the motion to dismiss, not on the grounds that I'm concerned that my client will not get review, but because I want you to make changes in how you interpret veterans' preferences on a much broader basis.
Well, he was defending the AJ's original decision, wasn't he?
He was talking about changes to the...
No, but he's also talking about changes, but basically the opposition was defending the original decision. And what the Veterans Administration did was to say, we give up, and giving up would leave the board decision that had vacated the original administrative judge's decision. And what Mr. Chang was saying is, you know, this isn't right. I'm entitled to have that decision. If you're giving up, I'm entitled to have that AJ decision reinstated. So there's a legal obligation under the Veterans Administration to comply with that decision.
I was a little confused by that back and forth, because on page 209 of the record, in the motion to dismiss, which was filed on, I believe, November 18th, 2001, the agency said, we also note that because dismissal benefits the initial decision.
On 209, where are you? What page?
It is the last full paragraph in the last sentence.
Further,
we note also that because dismissal would provide appellant the benefits of the initial decision, and she has not petitioned for its review, it does not appear that dismissal would adversely affect appellant's rights.
Yeah, but look at page 63. In response to his pleading, the board says, her objection appears to be based on her belief that the withdrawal of the agency's petition for review will result in the initial decision remaining vacated. And they do exactly what he asked, and they reinstate the original decision. So as part of that board decision, he got additional relief. He got the thing reinstated. He's claiming the fees he incurred. She's claiming the fees that he incurred in achieving that successful result. That is the reinstatement of the original decision. How can you possibly oppose the recovery of those fees?
We don't think that. Well, I guess there's a difference in terms of the legal effect of the dismissal. The board's expectation at the time was, in fact, that would not result in her not getting relief, but in fact getting all the relief that she ultimately got. Instead, Ms. Augustine opposed that dismissal and sought changes to
Wait, you're not addressing my question. On page 64, the board says, we vacate the board's order and opinion, that is, vacate the one that originally vacated the AJ's decision. The effect of this is to reinstate the AJ's decision, right?
Yes, it is.
And he successfully argued for that result, right?
That it followed the brief, but that wasn't the result he was arguing for.
He wasn't arguing for the reinstatement of the decision?
No, he was arguing for changes to the decisions and
changes. Well, he was arguing for that too, but he was also defending the original AJ decision, wasn't he?
His client doesn't get, once the board has vacated the AJ's decision, when the board took the case up, his client gets nada, nothing, never gets a penny of her previous award unless either the full board rules in her favor or the full board reinstates the decision that they have vacated. Got it?
Yes, Your Honor.
Got it. Okay. And so until such a time as the full board, either on its own, ruled in her favor on the merits, which they never did, or they reinstate Reed's AJ opinion in her favor, she is at jeopardy. She's out of the money. Got
it? Yes,
Your Honor. Got it. Mr. Chang filed a series of pieces of paper saying, don't just dismiss the government's appeal, make certain my client gets her money.
It was based on the record. The agency expected that would happen, and then before he even...
Well, the agency may have expected it to happen, and catch 22, the agency doesn't do it. It wouldn't be the first time we saw that go on. But until the board finally reinstated the AJ's decision, she was out of the money. Out of the money.
And
if you take what you've done, and I congratulate you for it, you have told us that you no longer defend either rationale used by the AJ. Two of the rationales. One, you filed your appearance too late. You give up on that, don't you?
That we found to be only relevant insofar as it was evidence that his fees were not connected to the case.
It can't go to reasonableness.
It wasn't the date of the appearance.
It can't go to reasonableness of the reasonableness of your fee can't depend on when you filed your notice of appearance, right?
No, and we don't, okay, we don't think that's
so
what
you
happened,
gave,
but no,
you,
we don't
that's gone.
That's
you gave rational. That you gave that up. And secondly, the notion that you can only have a reasonable fee if you can show that your work caused the government to cave in, you give up on that too. Yep.
That's not our position. We think that there were
evidentiary bases. It was your position when you wrote your red brief, but somebody got some religion over there across town before you came over here to face us. Right?
Just doing the best we can, Your Honor.
Well, under the theory of the AJ, it's fabulous. An employee goes to the board, doesn't get fired, goes to the board, on her own, gets vindicated. The government decides to appeal. The government appeals. She doesn't know what to do. She hires a lawyer. Lawyer charges her a lot of money. The government takes a good look at it and says, maybe the lawyer's got something going here. We'll just quit. And so the government says, we throw in the towel, we quit, we dismiss our appeal. Then in those fact situations, if this case were to stand, no attorney's fees would ever come under this statute. Because you can't prove that the government caved in because of your work. Because when Chang takes your deposition and asks you, did you cave in because of my good work, you say attorney-client privilege, I don't have to answer that. So it's one of the most phenomenal catch-22s I've seen in years. And I'm glad that the government saw that between the time they filed their red brief and when they came in front of us. So, congratulations.
Anything further, Mr. Todar?
We think that there were substantial... We think that the AG's decision was not arbitrary and capricious.
We should vacate and remand for a full hearing on quantum to sort out exactly which hours were done in defense of her case and which ones weren't.
If the court finds that it was not reasonable to award no fee at all, then there should be a remand for the drawing of the proper line for what was on the appeal as opposed to on the other issues. However, we feel that there was reasonable effort evidence given that Mr. Chang had the opportunity after the show of cause order to show what fees were related to the appeal.
If you could settle the case in 24 hours, you'd probably avoid an opinion.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Todar. Anything further?
Nothing, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chang?
Yes.
Is there anything which you would wish to respond to?
Yes, I think it's correct on the record. I never advised my client how to get a driver's license, nor have I ever advised my client how to make a Chinese dish either. Everything I've found is reasonably related to the work, to the case, in my good faith professional judgment as needed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chang. I think that concludes our hearing today.